Check out this sneak peek from today's episode.
Our experiences are constantly happening. I mean, they happen in the past, they're happening right now, and they will happen in the future. And so our experiences are constantly giving us data and, you know, influencing us and also allowing us to show up in certain ways and modify our mindsets and our abilities and our know-how.
Welcome to the Leadership Lab podcast, episode number 180. My name is Patrick Ledden, and I serve as your host in the Leadership Lab. This podcast is for leaders, and folks, that means this podcast is for you. Because whether you're leading a team of one, yourself, a larger team, or an entire organization, you are a leader. You know, I truly believe that we can learn lessons about leadership from a wide range of sources, and it's with this in mind that I invite guests to join me each week in the Leadership Lab. I'm joined today in the Leadership Lab by Soren Kaplan. Soren is a best-selling and award-winning author, a columnist for Inc. magazine, a leading keynote speaker, and the founder of Praxy.com. He's also an affiliate at the Center for Effective Organizations at USC's Marshall School of Business. And Business Insider and the Thinkers 50 have recognized him as one of the world's top management thought leaders and consultants. In our conversation today, we talk about Soren's latest book, Experiential Intelligence, Harness the Power of Experience for Personal and Business Breakthroughs. Soren talks about how first there was IQ to predict success, then emotional intelligence, or EQ, now experiential intelligence, or XQ, expands our understanding of what's needed to thrive in today's disruptive world. In his book and in our conversation, you're going to learn about how to become a better leader, how to increase team performance, collaboration, and innovation, and how to transform your organization's culture. You're going to want to grab something to write with, sit back, prepare to take some notes, as Soren Kaplan and I get together in the Leadership Lab. Hey, Soren Kaplan, thanks so much for joining me today in the Leadership Lab.
Happy to be here.
Happy to have you here, my friend. You just had a book come out, so it's a big week for you.
It is a big week. I'm pumped about it. It's called Experiential Intelligence, and it's all about how our personal life experiences and professional experiences actually give us real intelligence on par with IQ and emotional intelligence, EQ. And I'm really, really excited about this concept.
Brilliant. Well, let's dig into that. And I'm sure the audience immediately is like, wait a minute, I have experiences. I have things I've lived through, I've learned from. So all of us are going to definitely understand a little bit more about ourselves based upon this conversation. And I encourage everybody to pick up a copy of your book and share later on how they can do that. Before we dive into the book though, Soren, would you mind telling us a little bit about yourself so the listeners know who's the guy behind the mic?
You got it. So I've had 30 years in business. I ran the internal strategy consulting group at HP in Silicon Valley. But I had a consulting firm for many years, worked with probably 30 of the Fortune 1000 and advised them on innovation and culture and leadership, like NBC Universal, Disney, Medtronic, kind of the list goes on. But you know, part of what I've also done is connected, like doing real world things in business to leadership development and academia. So I'm affiliated with the Marshall School of Business and the Center for Effective Organizations at USC, and have taught globally around the world as well, leadership development.
Yeah, folks, if you take a look at Soren Kaplan's page and you just look at the clients he's worked with, he's got some amazing logos. He's worked with like the real deal organizations out there. And I know we're going to learn a lot from him as he talks about his book, Experiential Intelligence. So Soren, tell us a little bit about the premise behind the book and what people get from picking up and reading it.
Sure. The whole premise is that our whole society and how we think about what leads to success, as well as even satisfaction in life, is intelligence. But that definition of intelligence is typically tied to IQ and the intellect and your problem solving. And that is important, no doubt. Then that concept is over 100 years old. And, you know, we have all these IQ tests to measure that. 50 years ago, and it's been 50 years since emotional intelligence came out on the scene and was popularized in the 1990s. And so we know that, you know, kind of your brain and smarts, as well as emotions and kind of understanding that, are important for success in business and in life. We've assumed that that's kind of the recipe. Well, if you really look at what leads to abilities you develop over time and your kind of knowledge and your know-how to get things done, it's actually your experiences playing a huge role that is kind of underappreciated in society and culture and in business. And so what this book does is essentially says, it's the third leg of the stool along with IQ and EQ to really understand what leads to success in terms of innovation, in terms of talent management, leadership development, transformational change.
You know, it's interesting. We talk about this kind of undertapped or underplayed component around experiential intelligence. It made me think a couple things around experience that I've heard before. And I'd love to hear as an expert what you have to say this about this regarding experience. Sometimes it's downplayed by the individual. Oh, what I did wasn't that important. The experience I had is like everybody else's, even though it may or may not be. It may not be helpful in this situation. We kind of downplay our experiences at times. And the other thing will sometimes is organizations will downplay people's experiences. I mean, think about this. You hire people based upon a number of things, but one component of it is their resume. And the resume is often a list of experiences they've had, maybe the results they've been able to achieve in those various roles. And we interview around that. But then after we bring them on board, we kind of don't want to hear about that anymore. Because you'll even hear people say, like, oh, if Soren talks one more time about working in this organization, you know, we're going to show him the door type of thing. It's like, but that's one of the reasons you hired him in, is to bring this other experience to the table.
Everyone has unique experiences. No two people's experiences are alike. That's why I think about experiential intelligence as your unique internal fingerprint. And so what I mean by that is when you look at the experiences you've had, you can downplay them, sure. But what you have an opportunity, everyone has an opportunity to do, is to look into your experiences and the unique collection of those experiences and understand what shaped you or what gave you assets around how you think, your mindsets, which are really your attitudes and beliefs about yourself, about other people in the world. So your mindsets are shaped and influenced by your experiences. You have abilities that you develop. It's kind of like that 10,000 hour rule that was popularized by Malcolm Gladwell around if you've done a lot of things in your life and you've kind of focused on certain things, and those things can be explicit in terms of just a trade, but they can also be very implicit, which I'll talk about in a moment because there's some hidden sources of experiential intelligence too. But they develop your abilities and they develop your know-how and your skills. So, you know, if you look at that unique combination of what you personally have experienced, you can kind of decipher kind of that differentiation that you bring to, you know, your work, your profession, as well as even your life.
When I first started into it, and this makes perfect sense, when I first started into it, though, talking to you about it, I mentioned like resume, like the experiences I list on my resume. But I often tell my students at school, like most of the things that actually have brought me value are in the white space of that resume. There are the mistakes I made, the things I don't necessarily highlight, because the resume is kind of like this curated list of things. But is it fair to say that our experience is a lot broader than just a few bullets on our resume? It may even go all the way back to our childhood, our upbringing, experience we had growing up as well.
I use a lot of personal experiences in my book to demonstrate how this stuff works. So like you said, you could go to my website and it looks pretty professional. And, you know, I've done a lot of things and that's all great. It's kind of like the personal brand that you've talked about in some of your other podcasts. Well, I had a mother who had a mental illness when I was growing up. My father was rarely around. By the time I was 15 years old, we had moved 16 times. So I literally would call what I experienced early in life traumatic in many ways. I had to live with ambiguity and uncertainty. I had to make decisions with very limited data as a little child. Well, those are the things, if you think about living with uncertainty, managing ambiguity, working with very little data and pivoting based on what you do know. Those are things that you need for innovation. Those are things that you need to navigate today's disruptive world. Well, those things I had to work on myself, and I had to kind of understand how they impacted my self-limiting beliefs and, you know, challenged me in various ways personally. But I also looked at, and part of my book is about how you can go through examining your own experiences as traumatic or as challenging as they may be and deciphering those assets that they gave you. Because the same things that traumatized me in my childhood actually gave me unique strengths, not in, despite them, but because of them. And so everyone has challenging experiences. The question is, how do you lean into those and understand them so you can leverage them to achieve your goals? And that's really what experiential intelligence is about. It's about self-awareness around that and making it tangible as well.
So how do you go back and examine those things? How do you go back and kind of, maybe some might be very traumatic, so you've historically not even wanted to go there, but not necessarily. I mean, there may be some positive things as well that you can draw from, but how do you go back and kind of do that inventory?
Yeah. Well, the easiest way is to just reflect on the stories of your life that most impacted you. And so I have a number of tools in my book. One's called the impact chart. So you can look at the positive impacts and the negative impacts. And so as you inventory those things that as you reflect, believe that they shaped you in some way, or they had a, positive or negative impact because of whatever happened in that time of your life, you can decipher them and understand in more kind of a deeper way in terms of your own kind of self-awareness. What did you experience? What messages from that experience did they deliver to you that you internalized? As well as then, how did you respond to that? And what did you do in that context that may have actually given you certain kind of operating norms in terms of how you approach life that then you can kind of spin? Maybe they turned into some dysfunction at some point because they were just hard, but you can also, if you understand it, you can then turn that around to say, well, I've operated this way. Let me let go of that and let me lean into how I then can respond to, living with ambiguity. And actually there's some strengths within that I have. So it's really about kind of deciphering your stories, having some structure to do so. And it, for certain people, maybe there are some traumas that you need to work through and, kind of getting more formal support, but there's a lot of simple ways in which you can kind of get started with that.
Yeah, that makes good sense. Because when I think about, you mentioned ambiguity, uncertainty, kind of making decisions with little data, I teach a class about leading business through times of crisis, and it's all about dealing with ambiguity, uncertainty. I mean, that's what crises often causes, and having to make decisions with a little bit of data in front of you and kind of knowing where your North Star is in the moment sometimes is really critical.
Sometimes, sometimes the mindsets that we hold, and I know you focus on kind of how your mindsets are kind of evolve and develop. I was working with an executive team, and the CEO, this is a Fortune 500 company. The CEO told his executive team never to use the word culture. This CEO had a finance background, and culture felt too amorphous. But I was in there trying to help them figure out how to create an innovation culture, how to focus on, driving greater growth, business growth through new products and services and business models. But we couldn't talk about the word culture. So that CEO was uncomfortable with that ambiguous term because it was pretty soft. You couldn't analyze it like a balance sheet. Mm-hmm. And so if you hold mindsets that maybe, and that CEO wasn't really aware that was, I believe, getting in his way. So if you hold those mindsets, certain things could be getting in your way that you're not even aware of. And it's based on the fact that you've had certain experiences and they've impacted how you think, your beliefs about yourself and about the world. And so if you're influenced by that and not aware of it, there's just tremendous opportunity as an individual to get in touch with those things that are your blind spots. And also as a leader in an organization, to help the organization collectively understand those mindsets that it holds, which is really its culture.
So a lot of your book focuses on how to become a better leader yourself, but what about the other side? And help me think through a little bit about helping other people. Like if I had a team of people and I realized I want to draw the experiences from all of them out, that experiential intelligence that they all have, how do I kind of help my team go through that?
Yeah, great question. Experiential intelligence lives at many levels. So it's an individual concept at its core, because, it's your experiences, but teams are just collections of individual people. Mm-hmm. And so when a team shares common mindsets, abilities, and know-how, then those things shape the culture of the team. And then I can say, well, there's multiple teams and those can shape the culture of an organization. So you have multiple kind of dimensions there. But as a team, as a leader of a team, you have an opportunity to understand what are the mindsets of your team. What are the things that are getting in the way of your effectiveness, or what are the things, your attitudes and beliefs as a team that you want to make explicit for the team? And then the other thing is the abilities of a team. I think this is where it kind of gets more tangible in terms of looking at what people bring. You said, you know, we all bring our, you know, kind of resumes to the table, and they're the formal things that we have contributed, you know, in work, and it's kind of our personal brand, if you will. Well, that's all true. And every team has an opportunity to look kind of beyond that formal resume and the work experience to say, what are those life experiences I've had in my own communities, in traveling the world and experiencing different cultures, in living with certain types of, you know, kind of challenges or living with ambiguity that we can leverage that goes beyond the resume and into the lives of those actual people on the team who are real human beings and come to the party with all they have, the good and the bad. How do you kind of help everyone understand what those assets are, the good stuff that people can bring to the party and leverage that and play it off of each other?
Yeah, so true. As you're talking about that, I'm just thinking, like, if I'm listening to the podcast and I have a team of 10 people, 8 or 10 people or whatever it might be, when you start thinking about the layers and layers and layers of experiences that those 8 people have had, right? Yeah. Even if you just kind of go to the foundational moments or maybe are the stories that you tell themselves, if everybody has, I don't know, you would tell me, but, you know, 5 to 10 of those things or something like that. If I had like 10 stories that are kind of like foundational stories to me throughout my life that I've experienced, that's 80. That's 80 stories across, or 100 stories, perhaps, if there's 10 people on a team. That's a lot of layers of opportunity that we explore.
You're spot on. I have a number of different strategies that teams can use. The first one is stack your team with diverse experiences. So, you know, we know diversity is important in this day and age. We've heard, you know, different ways in which people define diversity. Diversity is absolutely important. And I would suggest that we also need to look at the diverse experiences that people have in life and amplify it, just like you said. And you know, let me kind of flip it around back on you, because I think that as we look at, I shared some of my challenging experiences and kind of how that shaped kind of the strengths that I bring to the party, I guess. How about for yourself? I'm always curious, you know, you've been doing this work and focus on leadership for a long time, and you've advised and you do this podcast and you kind of help the world see opportunities in leadership. What are the things that you would point to that are not on your resume that you think have given you the ability to be successful and do what you're doing today? Like, how do you tap into what those experiences are and the assets you've gained?
That's a good question. I've been a little bit more open about these things in recent years, which I think has been and helpful for me and hopefully for the audience as well. But as you're asking me that, I think of two things, and both of which I've written about recently. That's why they're really on top of my head. The one I wrote about the other day, I was just talking about my father, and I titled the article, My Dad Doesn't Have Time for Me, which is obviously a catch your attention type of thing. And I'm the youngest of 5 kids from the South Side of Chicago. My dad worked 2 or 3 jobs growing up, so there was a degree of not having time for me, but that's not what I was talking about here. What I was talking about was my dad at 91 is traveling to Florida to spend the winter with a buddy of his who's actually a widower. His wife just passed away, so they're 2 widowers going to Florida for a little while, and how excited he was about that. And he literally didn't have time for me. I called him around Christmas to wish him a Merry Christmas. And it was pretty much like, I got to go. I got to pack. It was like the quickest holiday greeting I've ever given to anybody. And then shortly thereafter, I asked him if he wanted to get together for lunch. And it was like, I got to pack. Didn't you hear that type of thing? I mean, he's just focused on this type of thing. And I looked at it as a little bit of, when I look back at the story of what he's taught me over the course of my life, it was a lot about persistence and hard work and commitment and loyalty and things like that. But now, even now, he's kind of writing a new story that I'm watching, which is more about like self-care and having something to look forward to in life and something very different. But I would say historically, I look at my dad and say, like, he taught me about persistence and commitment and loyalty and things like that. Then another thing that's a story that's been playing in my mind recently is when I was 17, I enlisted in the military. It was a way to go to college because college wasn't really on anybody's radar. I didn't grow up in a community where kids went to college. So I decided I want to go to college. I needed to join the military to do it because that same father of mine was like, yeah, you got to figure out a way to pay for that. And I initially went to junior college and I was flunking out of junior college. I mean, I was completely irresponsible and ill-prepared to be anywhere near an adult in life. So my solution to that was to drop out of community college and then go into the Army quicker than I was supposed to schedule to go. But what that taught me was a fair amount of like recognizing kind of where you are in the moment. And in my case, going to a place that was helping me to become the next version of myself I needed to be, which was the military. I needed that discipline, rigor, and consistency. For many years, that was probably a hidden spot on looked at my resume and saw community college dropout. But in the last few months, I actually wrote something about community college dropout to Vanderbilt professor, because that's quite a big transition. But going through that experience taught me. So I don't know if that's the type of thing you're looking for, but in my mind, those are things that shaped me. Watching my dad work hard, watching him, you know, interact to varying degrees with five kids, watching, you know, that all that unfold, being the youngest kid and kind of being treated oftentimes as the youngest kid. Actually, I had one more I just thought of, if I may, is I was talking to my wife the other day and I said, it's an interesting dynamic in my mind going on, because growing up the youngest of five kids, I was always the youngest person in the house by 10 years or more. So I was always the youngest person in the house. Now, as the oldest person in my house with adult kids who are married and a grandchild on the way, it's a very different dynamic where I look at it and go, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do in this role, because I've always kind of mentally been in a different role.
Those are great examples and exactly what I was looking for. And let me just connect to two things here. So your experiences that you said shape you are both kind of your past experiences from decades ago, dropping out of school, but also your present day experience, really, with your dad. Our experiences are constantly happening. And they happen in the past, they're happening right now, and they will happen in the future. And so our experiences are constantly giving us data and, you know, influencing us and also allowing us to show up in certain ways and modify our mindsets and our abilities and our know-how. You mentioned, I love the dropout story, you know, community college dropout, because if you just hear that on the surface, it's like, oh, what a loser. That is such a bad thing. Actually, no, it made you who you are. It gave you an opportunity. You were in touch with what you needed to do. You leaned into joining the military. You got tons out of the military. You've leveraged that now into, you know, kind of that discipline of what you do. So what can seem like a negative experience, if you look at it, decipher it, recognize what it gave to you, that concept of negative actually flips into positive. And you just demonstrated that beautifully. And then the thing with your dad is also really beautiful, because you're living in the moment. You're not experiencing rejection. You're actually experiencing what that's teaching you and saying, wow, I want to be like that. I want to have that purpose, have that drive when I'm in my 90s. And so, you know, both of those are really wonderful examples of experiential intelligence and what you've, you know, gotten out of your experiences, both in the past and in present.
Yeah, I experience joy for my father now. I'm excited for him to go do that. And there, you know, I've watched him. I know this is you're the guest on this, but I'm talking more at this point. Turn the table on me. But I've watched him evolve over the years. You know, I watched him as the provider, if you will, the one providing the meals on the table for a family of seven and, you know, kind of rough and tumble neighborhood type of thing. And I watched him do all that for all those years. And then I watched him become a grandpa and like almost a different version of himself. I guess my dad's a twin and his twin sister's still alive, and both of them lost their spouses in the same year. And I remember his twin sister saying to me, no, he's just becoming more like how he once was, type of thing. And it was like revealing a new side of him, if you will, that I just hadn't seen because of circumstances. And now I watch him evolve as well. So to me, it's always this, what he's showing me is that the ability of us to continue to evolve over the course of our lives. That's why I talk so much about mindset or rereading the same text 10 times at different times of your life, because it has different meaning to you.
It absolutely does. And, you know, I do want to point out, and I appreciate you kind of opening up with these stories, is in the book, what I try to focus on is the notion that our lenses in terms of how, you know, our early life experiences in our families shape us. It's inevitable. And so that shapes our mindsets, our beliefs about the world and our attitudes. Well, what you've demonstrated is something I think is really important in what I write about, which is to be able to be self-aware enough to recognize what you're seeing and the assets that it contains. We can have difficult family experiences and hold resentment, and you know, a lot of us do. And there are times
where I did.
Of course. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Me too. And at the same time, we can look at, and it's holding that kind of duality, that dichotomy. It was painful. And I appreciate this thing about that person or about my experience. And great leaders, in my view, can hold these paradoxical concepts all at one time and then be able to, you know, kind of shift how they think about themselves and the world and then do something with that in a positive, constructive way. So that's really what leveraging your experiential intelligence is about.
Well, as you're talking about experiential intelligence, I don't know if this to be true or not. You're the expert on the topic, but it seems to me, like, I do a lot of writing and people to varying degrees enjoy things I write or learn from them. But part of it is that I have just become wired. I don't think I ever started this way, but I've just come wired over time to look at every situation and say, what's the lesson from this? And I've gotten pretty good at that. So I don't know if that's a sign of a degree of, like, I've kind of tapped into a little bit of what we were talking about, but I look at situations, I say, okay, that was not fun, but here's something. There's this expression in people who like to do outdoor stuff, and you probably have heard this too, like three types of fun. There's the fun where while you're doing it, it is fun. You're like smiling and laughing and enjoying it. There's the other one where when you're doing it, it doesn't feel like fun, but you look back and you have fond memories. Like, we dealt with that product recall and we did it great as a team and we learned from it. And then there's the third one where it's not fun when you do it and it's not fun when you look back at it. But yeah. But I feel like any of those situations, I can always look at them and go, okay, what did I learn from it? Or what can other people learn from it? Is that the type of, I'm not trying to pat myself on the back. I'm just trying to understand. Is that the type of behavior that's manifesting when people are kind of tapping into what you're talking about?
It is. And there's a little bit more to it. Please, so yeah. It's learning. It is learning. Obviously you need to kind of reflect and kind of say, what did I learn? But it's learning within understanding how it shaped you. Meaning, how do I think differently because of this experience, or how did that experience shape how I think that I actually isn't serving me well? So it's, you know, the shaping of the mindsets. It's the abilities that it fostered. And here's a quick example from my childhood also, which is, I think, just, it's a fun example. My grandfather was a fashion designer in New York City. He designed like fur coats and things like that. We were in a store one time and we're shopping, and he points out like the sale rack and kind of they're really kind of cheaper shirts. And he's like, those shirts, if I put a label on them, that was kind of a couture label, I could sell them for 10 times as much. And he's like, everyone's being fooled by these brands. And he was kind of like, you know, he was in that world. And so he was kind of making fun of himself at the same time. Well, I was probably 7 or 8 years old at the time, but that stuck with me, so that I kind of have a real sensitivity to kind of the marketing and consumer behavior and consumer psychology. And that led me to, you know, in combination with all my other experiences, to really, you know, focusing in on innovation and understanding unmet needs and consumer behavior, to really recognize kind of the relativity of value based on, you know, kind of consumer perceptions and needs. So those little experiences actually can have big impacts. Also, is kind of one of the messages. And so I think that if you look at those things that you learn from, I learned from him. But it also shaped my thinking and shaped like where I decided to focus and grow my certain abilities around the work that I've done. So, you know, this is kind of like, yes, it's learning, and it's learning with that kind of structure in mind.
No, that makes perfect sense. And thanks for the extension of that. I'm going to definitely work on that to see how I can take some of these learnings and grow and get smarter from them. So when you wrote the book, oftentimes when people are writing books, they have an audience in mind, or they picture somebody kind of having this book in hand, filling out the tools that you provide, or taking notes on the side, kind of applying the concepts. When you think about the book's out, people go to Amazon right now and order it. Here's kind of some of the people I see ordering it and how they're going to use it.
Well, my audience is typically people in organizations who are driving strategy, innovation, and change, and usually with a people focus, because my background is in organizational psychology. So those are the people, kind of, business people who are driving change. However, the way I wrote this book is the concept is applicable to parenting, to education, to psychology, because we all have experiences. Those experiences shape us. Those experiences give us strengths. If we figure out how to look at them, we can leverage them. And if we're delivering experiences, either as a leader or a teacher or a parent, we can be more conscious of what we're doing and how we're showing up and the kind of experiences we're imparting on those we're influencing, which means that we're shaping people's mindsets, abilities, and the know-how they develop by those experiences, whether they're in the home, whether they're at school, whether they're in a team, whether they're in a nonprofit organization, whether they're in a for-profit organization. So, my primary audience are people who, kind of have that formal structure set up, but I've gotten a lot of interest, and I actually have some articles and some other resources that I provide as part of the toolkit that I give away when somebody gets the book that go way beyond it. It goes to, life. How do you leverage your experiences to have more success and be more satisfied with your life?
Do you think that when I would read through the book and I was beginning to think more about like how I'm having those type of conversations, how I'm showing up, as you said, how I'm doing those type of things, do you think that there are times where I can show up and kind of create that moment with somebody with a degree of intention? I know I can't control the situation. It depends how they show up and what's going on in the situation. But, your grandpa that day, when he was pointing to the clothes on the clothes rack, probably didn't recognize he was telling you an impactful story in that moment, right? He was probably passing time or saying something off the top of his head, or maybe trying to impart some wisdom on you or whatever he was doing. I'm not trying to get in his mind, but he could have been doing a variety of things, but probably not thinking this is something that's going to stick with you for decades type of thing. But are there certain things a leader can do in an organization, for example, to really maybe heighten the opportunity or heighten the chance that they're going to have a conversation that will be impactful like that?
If you look at Google did a bunch of research a while ago on the success factors for teams, and psychological safety was came up as number one. I think that creating that psychological safety is important, and leading with a little bit of vulnerability in terms of sharing one's own stories. I've shared some here. You've shared some here. A lot of leaders, I think, believe they need to show up in a really polished, focused way where there's no chinks in the armor and there's no vulnerability. Well, I think in this day and age, we all realize that we're perfectly imperfect people, and that's okay. And so how do we show up? We can demonstrate our own vulnerability and talk about, here's where I, have some limitations based on certain things that I'm bringing to the party, and here's where my strengths are, and help elicit that from other people. I also talk about creating what I call positive relationship loops in teams and organizations, which basically means how do you leverage strengths, amplify those across the team, and then try to get more of it, and then kind of nip some of the negative cycles that you can have in terms of blame and defensiveness in the bud. So those are all things. And if you look at your own behavior as a leader, it actually can be hard to be self-introspective and see what you're doing. But if you have a trusted coach or an advisor or a partner, then you can kind of have people give you, kind of feedback. And as long as you're not defensive, you can look at your own behavior, because everything you do is creating experiences for everyone else. And that creates team culture and organizational culture. And so being able to get that feedback on a kind of ongoing basis with those you really trust is really valuable. And when you do that, And then you show up in a way that fosters everyone else's experiential intelligence. I call that amplification. You're amplifying experiential intelligence in your team and your organization.
Soren, if people want to learn more about you and your work, where can they go to?
My website is sorenkaplan.com, SorenKaplan.com. And you can get even a free chapter, first chapter of my book right off of my website. And there's a whole toolkit as well that includes a lot of these tools. And every chapter even has a video introduction using a QR code that's printed in the book. So I've tried to make the book as much of an experience as possible as well for people beyond just reading, so to speak.
Awesome. Well, folks, if you want to check out the Soren Kaplan experience, go to SorenKaplan.com, or you can click the link in the notes section of this podcast. And once you get there, you might want to bookmark it, because I think you'll want to go back over and over again. Soren, thanks so much for joining me today in the Leadership Lab. I've learned so much from you. I know the listeners have as well. And I just wish you all the best with the book and in this new year of 2023.
Thanks so much, Patrick.
Well, folks, that's all I have for today's episode. My thanks to Soren Kaplan for joining me in the Leadership Lab to talk about his latest book, Experiential Intelligence: Harness the Power of Experience for Personal and Business Breakthroughs. If you could think about one person who would benefit from hearing my conversation today with Soren about experiential intelligence and how they could tap into their experience to become a more effective leader, I encourage you to share a copy of the link of this podcast with that person. This is the fastest growing leadership podcast on planet Earth. Get this, it's ranked in the top 1% of all podcasts globally. And it's because people like you share conversations like the one I just had with Soren with a friend or colleague, and it expands those who are listening, learning, and growing because of this podcast. That's all I have for today. Thanks so much for joining me. My name's Dr. Patrick Ledin. Now go make it a great day.